You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Hello, pet parents. Welcome to the Doggy Dish on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Christy Vaughn, and I'm so excited about today's show. We have special guest, Dr. Kim Bloomer, here to discuss the wonderful work she's doing with animal nutrition. She is going to share with us her holistic and natural approach right after these messages from our sponsors.
We'll be right back right after these messages. Stay tuned.
Pet Life Radio, the number one pet radio network on the planet, joins forces with iHeartRadio to put the power of your pets in your pocket.
Awesome.
Download the iHeartRadio app and rock Pet Life Radio on your phone, on your tablet, on your Xbox, in your car. Pet talk, pet tunes, and fun pet times. Pet Life Radio and iHeartRadio. Positively possum.
Dogs leave fur wherever they go. It collects all over the home. There are many tools designed to stop dog hair spreading, but their effectiveness varies, and afterwards you have to clean the tool, then the floor. With the Dyson Groom Tool, you simply deploy the bristles, then gently brush the coat. Loose fur is removed, while dead skin and allergens are captured by the vacuum. And to clean up, you simply release the trigger.
To get this awesome Dyson Groom Tool, go to DysonDeals.com. That's DysonDeals.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Doggy Dish. I'm here with Dr. Kim Bloomer, who is a certified animal naturopath. She's certified in small animal nutrition, with years of experience in animal health. Dr. Kim is also a published author, writer, blogger, co-host of Animal Talk Naturally, and co-founder of the American Council of Animal Naturopathy. Welcome, Dr. Kim. We're so excited to have you on the Doggy Dish.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Christy. It is my pleasure and honor to be with you.
Oh, well, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to chat with us. So I want to start out with asking you what exactly a naturopath does. Would you mind explaining it a little bit to our listeners in case some of them out there don't really know what you do?
I know a lot of people will say to me, and it's interesting, Christy, because in this country, we aren't known for, you know, very well, because most people think that the only healthcare practitioner typically available to them for their pets is a veterinarian. But in other countries, animal naturopaths are used as much as, if not more, than veterinarians in many cases. So it's just something that we have to educate the American public on. This is my simple sentence when somebody asks me that question, because trust me, I get asked that a lot. My simple answer is veterinarians treat disease and animal naturopaths build health. So we focus on prevention and a whole health approach, which will keep your pet healthy, versus waiting till they're sick to treat them for a disease with a conventional approach.
That's awesome.
That's my simplest answer.
Well, that's great. That's perfect. That's absolutely perfect. And that gives us a better idea of what exactly you do. Mm-hmm. And I think in this country, not only with pets, we also, unfortunately, we don't really take that approach with ourselves, do we?
No.
We really treat the symptoms. We don't really prevent illness and disease. Mm-hmm. So I love your approach. I think that's great. And now, how long have you been in this field?
I've been in this field, let's see, well, I've actually been working with animals since I was 15. I won't tell you how many years that is, because then I'll give away my age. But let's just say over 40 years.
Oh,
I began working, you know, as a grooming assistant, and then worked my way through, you know, in veterinary medicine as a vet tech, and then as I've worked in a variety of fields pertaining to animals, but usually around health. And I, as a child, I remember Christy saying to me, I remember I was 8 years old, and I was always saying, I just want to help animals and people be well. And I started, you know, through my years, I had worked in various human health things as well, because my stepfather who raised me was an exercise physiologist. So I had the opportunity to learn, and he was from another country, he was from Sweden. So I learned a lot of more natural approach to health care as a result of him. And then both of my grandmothers were, you know, old school folk medicine kind of people. So I guess I just had that influence. And as I grew older, as I was looking into health, because I was always very much an athlete, so I always wanted to find ways to take care of myself, I always felt this need to have to do that for animals. And yet it was restrictive in veterinary medicine because we were reactive rather than proactive, treating the symptoms, treating the after effects of, you know, after the animal was already sick. And yet even the prevention that we were being told was preventative was actually unknown to most pet owners even today, setting them up for long-time illness. So I didn't connect the dots then. It wasn't until I left that field and was studying more human health that I began to connect the dots, and also studied for my degree in human health. So when I went into this, it's probably been, oh gosh, 10 years now, and got my degree though way in 2007, because this is not a new, this is a fairly new thing in the United States, although as you can see, my journey's been a long one. And I started teaching this to my clients because that's really what we do. We guide our clients to help their pets, and we help them unlearn everything they thought that was health and what they could do for their pets, and we show them what health is and what set their pet up for ill health, and we empower them to make those decisions based on what they learn. And so what it really does is put the responsibility and the participation for their pet's health back in their hands. And that's what I do.
Well, that's
so
great.
Basically pick up the mess that's happened after they've gone the conventional route. And unfortunately, that's sad because it's what most pet owners think that they are supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, that's what we're told. And unfortunately, we lose a little bit of control. So it's great to hear that you're helping pet owners get some of that control back and
absolutely. Take
ownership of what they're doing for their pets.
Yeah, and I want them to participate. Usually they're afraid at first and say, well, what do I do about this one? What do you think you should do? So I'm going to throw back questions at them and teach them how to think things through from a whole health perspective. Once I lay the foundation and give them the foundation, then they can be empowered to decide. And then the decision is also their responsibility. And that part is often a little scary to people initially until mm-hmm. they start to see the results.
True. Very true. Yeah, it can be a little bit scary, but that's great that you're there to guide them along mm-hmm. the way. Great. Well, can you give us some basics of proper nutrition for your pets? I know we could probably talk about this for days, but what are some basics? If someone says, okay, can you just tell me some basics of proper nutrition for pets? What is your take on that?
My take is always to go according to the species. And this is where the struggle is for some, because of the veterinarians are being told that dogs, for example, are omnivores and cats are carnivores. And the evidence through the anatomy and physiology of both those animals points 100% to both of them being carnivores. So that means if I were to ask somebody, I can flip this question back on you, Christy, and say, well, what does a lion eat? And what does a wolf eat? And we can all answer that question. The reality is that a cat and a dog are still a wolf and a lion internally and in their needs. And so that's exactly what I tell them to feed their pets. Most people will give me a blank stare and go, and a lot of eye blinking, and then they will go, what do you mean? Do you mean like raw? And I say, absolutely, because that's what their bodies were designed to utilize their nutrition from. And so most people aren't going to go let their pet, their dog or cat, a cat you don't ever have to teach how to hunt. They will always know how to hunt. That's just innate in them. Dogs have kind of, you know, forgotten a little bit, but they still have that prey drive to go after prey. And so, but they don't usually, well, they can be not wanting to hunt them, in other words. But when I teach people there are a variety of ways to feed that pet that raw diet, it takes away the fear when I do that. Because, mm-hmm. you know, you go to a store, let's say, not everybody is, you know, eats meat these days. A lot of people, and in my field, a lot of people are vegan and vegetarian. So it is scary to them to think, oh, I'm going to feed that to my pet when I don't even eat it myself. Well, see, that's the point. You could take yourself out of the equation and look at it from what their needs are, not what our needs are. All of the advertising is appealing to your needs. It's mm-hmm. not appealing to the needs of your pet. So I always say, take yourself out of the equation and look at them for what they are, how they are anatomically and physiologically created and made to be, and what they need to thrive, not just survive. and look at what is normal for them, not what is common. And because a lot of people say, well, my pet is healthy and he's eating this. Well, that's not necessarily mean that they're healthy. It just means that it's common. We're seeing things that are common that aren't necessarily healthy. And so we've come to accept that as being normal. So what I teach them is what is normal, what is healthy, and then how to feed that. And it's very simple. If you go to the store and pick up, you know, I go to a butcher to pick up our food, and we get our dog's food from the same place. And we don't feed them the top grade cut meats, but we do find, you know, there's a lot of parts that humans don't typically eat that will get thrown out. But fortunately, the butchers are learning how to capitalize on that and sell that to those of us who are raw feeding our dogs and cats.
That's really neat. I had no idea.
It's very simple. It's very simple. How do I feed them? I take it out of the freezer, I defrost it, and I put it in, and I feed it to them. You know, and most raw feeders will feed on the ground on a towel or a blanket or even a mat that you can hose off. Sometimes, you know, it depends on your dog's, your situation, your different needs. A lot of people, we will start them out on a commercial raw. It's a ground mixture, and it's less scary to them. However, unfortunately, there's fillers in that and often vegetables, which carnivores cannot digest. So that makes it harder for them, and so harder on their body, and it takes longer for them to get well. Interesting that I had a client that I've been working with for a while, and she was been a raw feeder, but she was feeding commercial raw, and her dog was still having lots of problems, especially being itchy and nervous. And so I said, well, let me take a look at all this, whatever supplements you're feeding and whatever, what is your raw diet consist of? And when I saw the commercial diet, lo and behold, then she was feeding lots of fruit. And fruit is okay for a dog occasionally in season, meaning mostly berries and very little. My dogs rarely, if ever, get fruit. So they will only eat it in the wild because it's there, you know, and growing in the wild. And they will only eat it if their body needs it. If they're really, you know, starving and need to eat something, they're adaptive. All animals are, and they're also opportunistic. So they will eat what they have to survive. That's why our pets will eat anything we set before them in most cases, because they're trying to survive.
Right.
So just because they will eat it doesn't mean that it's good for them. I mean, we eat a lot of stuff ourselves. It's not good for us, but we still eat
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So, there's so many similarities between the mm-hmm. two, if you think about it. And that's something that is lost on a lot of people. So I think that's great that you're bringing awareness to that. Yes, there are so many similarities.
And so I just simply tell them, get those parts that, you know, I start people out on one protein source. And again, your pet is going to eat. I have two dogs that I have now. I got one at 13 months. And then this female that we got, she was 7 years old. And neither one of them had been raw fed. Neither one of them, they had all been conventionally raised and had, you know, they had health problems as a result. And I had no trouble switching them over. There's no transitioning period needed, like you're told with changing different kibbles. It's not necessary with raw. You fast them for a day, and then you feed them, and that's it. And it's really simple.
Wow.
People think that they have to do all of these things and jump through all these hoops, and they're scared because it's raw. Oh, no, there's bones in it. Well, let me go back to this client. Anyway, she looked at the diet, and she was feeding this commercial raw that had vegetables and fruit. She was adding a lot of fruit to the diet, vegetables and grain. I don't know. Maybe there wasn't any grain in the mixture that she was getting, but I said, just stop that. And as we went along, I eliminated probably 80% of the supplements because they had things in them that the dog was obviously being affected by. Brewer's yeast, there was a lot of grains in the different supplements. After that, she said, she's still having some issues. I said, well, you're bathing her every week. You can't bathe her every week. I mean, dogs don't need to be bathed. And usually raw-fed dogs never have to be bathed unless they roll in mud or dirt. So because they just don't have any body odor, they don't have any body, their breath doesn't smell. I mean, they're clean. You brush them and they're clean. We got to the root of it. She was feeding a probiotic, an enzyme that was plant-based. Once we switched her off of that to a soil-based one, the dog, lo and behold, stopped the itching and so forth, and also started going, this is real important. You'll hear a lot of raw feeders talk about poop. Because the poop is a lot smaller. It doesn't smell like it does in a kibble-fed animal and so forth. And she said her dog just was not going to the bathroom every day. She started once we switched that one probiotic and enzyme. So it's all in, you know, a process of elimination and minimal and focusing on what, you know, the very foundation of all good health is what? Nutrition. But it's got to be species appropriate.
Okay.
And if it's not, then we're going to see health issues. Simple as that.
Great. That's great information. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll return with Dr. Kim Blumer after these messages from our sponsors.
sit, stay. We'll be right back after a short pause. Well, four to be exact.
Hi, this is Tim Link, animal communicator and pet expert, and host of Animal Rights on Pet Life Radio. Have you ever wanted to know what your pet is really thinking? Do you want to find out if they truly understand what you're trying to tell them? Ever wish you could build a better understanding and closer relationship with your pet? Well, now you can. Learning to communicate with animals is a four-part on-demand workshop. In the workshop, you'll learn the essential techniques that are necessary to communicate with animals, including what is animal communication, breathing correctly to achieve the perfect state to communicate with your animals at a deeper level, using guided meditation exercises and method to communicate with animals, and how to send and receive information from your animals. So if you're wanting to learn how to communicate and connect with your animals at a deeper level, visit PetLifeRadio.com/workshop and purchase and download Learning to Communicate with Animals. You'll be glad you did.
Coast to coast and around the world, it's All Behave with Arden Moore. Find out why cats and dogs do the things they do and get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get great tail-wagging pet tips and have a fur-flying fun time. All Behave with America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore. Every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Doggy Dish on Pet Life Radio. I'm here with Dr. Kim Bloomer, who is a certified animal naturopath. She's been sharing some awesome information with us. And before the break, we were just discussing a little bit about the raw diet. And Dr. Kim, you mentioned something about supplements. So I'm really curious to know, are supplements necessary? Let's say we switch our animal to raw foods. Is that necessary to complement the diet?
Yeah, the diet, here's the part that most people don't understand. How can just the meat and bones and organs be enough for a dog or a cat to have? How can that be enough nourishment? And that's because we're looking at it from our perspective. We know we need raw foods in our diet. We need raw fruits and vegetables, lots of them, you know. And so we seem to anthropomorphize that onto our pets. The answer to that is simply they don't, because you know where they get it from? They get it from the herbivore, the omnivore they're consuming. That animal has been able to assimilate that, digest it, and it's in their flesh. And that's where our carnivore is getting it from. They're at the top of the food chain. So they're going to get everything that that animal has digested all the way from the grass and the ground that they've eaten. Whatever they're eating, that's what the carnivore is eating, which is why it's real important to qualify what you're feeding them, because I typically feed grass-fed to my own dogs because I don't want them having the grains in their diet, so that's going to affect, you know, allergies and so forth in them. So they're getting the same stuff I'm getting, only they're not getting the same cuts of meat that I would eat. So they are supplements. To answer your question, I do supplement initially with most people because the animal has got to, the enzymes in their body, the probiotics, all of that's got to adapt to the new diet. What's happened when we're feeding them a kibble diet is carnivores have very, very high acid content in their stomach. Their pH, normal pH, should be right around 1, where ours is, you know, to be healthy, we're at, what, between 6 and 7. And so ours is much more alkaline, theirs is much more acidic. And so what happens is we raise theirs to a more alkaline state feeding them kibble, and so that's why they have so many digestive problems nowadays. Once we get them on that diet and their acidity in their stomach goes back to normal, then they can digest the food better, their raw diet. And so I have them on typically on probiotics and enzymes, make sure they're not plant-based, but that they're soil-based. There's some good ones. Vital Science has a good one that I use. And then I also put them on typically it's a whole food supplement. It's a humic fulvic acid. It's a mineral supplement, really. Because our soils are so depleted, that means that the herbivore and the omnivore are depleted, so the carnivore would be. So to supplement with a humic fulvic acid is definitely what I supplement my own pets with. So it depends. Some animals might need an omega-3 additional thing, depending on the age. So I always go at supplements from a whole food supplementation rather than isolated constituents. Hope that makes sense.
No, absolutely. That was great. Thank you. Now, if someone wanted to know whether or not the raw diet is appropriate for their dog, what would you suggest they do?
First of all, I would say yes, it is, because your dog is a carnivore. Second of all, I would say what I would suggest you do is to get someone to guide you, to help you with that if it's something that is scary to you. There are a lot of resources out there to learn. There are books, but they can be confusing. Some people will tell you to feed, you know, fruits and vegetables. Some won't. And so my suggestion is to get a guided consultation. Saves you money, time, effort, and gets you right to that, you know, somebody helping you and showing you what to do. And, of course, I'm going to suggest an animal naturopath to do that because, and specific ones, we have the American Council of Animal Naturopathy and practitioners listed there that we know have gone through that kind of training. There are some animal naturopaths out there now that are being taught that anything goes, whatever the pet owner wants. And our focus is always on what the pet needs, not what necessarily the pet owner wants. So I always, you know, clarify that. And when I explain that, I have never had a pet owner not understand that. And that's the key, I think, Christy, is helping them, educating them, and helping them to learn, because I'm not afraid to tell them what the truth is, and then they can look at that and say, well, I've had many, like a vegan client recently saying, it grosses me out, but my cats love it. You know, they understand once someone has explained it to them. And it's really simple. You will spend a lot of time and read a lot of stuff and may get confused, especially if you join raw feeding groups and so forth. So that's why my simple suggestion is just to get guided help. It'll save you a lot of money, time, and headache in the long run.
Sure. Oh, I can see that, definitely. Wow. So you've discussed so many, I'm in awe right now. You've discussed so many benefits. You know, I love the poop benefit that you discussed.
Yeah, and the no doggy odor.
Yeah, no dog odor. They don't need baths. Their coats are nice and healthy. Are there any drawbacks or anything to be careful of?
Well, again, you know, people say, well, you'll be told by a veterinarian that they can choke on a bone. They can choke on kibble too, and do. And yes, they could choke on some bones. It depends on If you're feeding them a big gargantuan leg bone, yeah. If you look at a carcass after lions and wolves clean a carcass, the big leg-bearing bones are usually left. So they're eating, you know, the backs, they're eating the necks, they're eating the smaller, less weight-bearing, not the weight-bearing bones, the not weight-bearing bones. So with my dogs, if I want to give them, say, a recreational bone, I will monitor them. We monitor them when they eat also. It's a good idea to do that for any pet. Leaving a dish out for them to eat from all day long isn't ever a good idea, because they can choke from kibble as well. So, yeah, there are cautions and there are ways to do this. And that's why I think a lot of people get frustrated and scared, because they're being told conflicting information. So if someone helps you and guides you, all of that fear is taken away and you know exactly what to do.
Okay. That's great advice. Now, I have to ask, because we do talk a lot about treats on this show. Mm-hmm. So do your dogs get treats?
They do. I get my pets dehydrated meat treats. They're all meat. They're dehydrated. And I don't get mine from China.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, because there's been a lot of recall on that lately. Have you seen the jerky treats are being recalled and so forth? So I do buy from suppliers here in this country. One excellent supplier who is a friend of mine as well, and she's in Arizona, is Red Angel Raw. It's redangelraw.com. And she supplies a variety of kinds of treats. And yes, she does have the jerky as well. But my favorite thing to feed my dogs, because they're crunchy and they're just simple to feed them, and it would be less scary for any pet owner. It doesn't look weird or anything. It just looks like any kind of treat they might be used to, and that's dehydrated long treats. And I get the dehydrated beef and or lamb. And you might think it sounds really gross, but it just feels like a cracker. But it's a pure dehydrated treat. So.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, that's good to know that they get treats.
Yes, they get.
We don't want anyone to worry about that.
Right. I know you have treats also, and so I hope I didn't suppose they're giving the dehydrated raw there. But
that's okay. Yeah, we do. We do a lot of dehydrated vegetables that some of our dogs like, because they do have allergies to meat. We actually have some customers of ours that have meat allergies, so they.
Might I say something about that? Only
sure. No, I'd love to get your opinion on that.
Yeah, they don't have allergies to the meat protein itself. What they, and this is what veterinarians are also telling them, no carnivore can have an allergy to the very food they need to eat. What they do have an allergy to is what that protein, the animal protein, in other words, the animal that they're eating, has been fed. So if it's cooked protein like you find in kibble, then they will have allergies to the cooked protein, yes, because that DNA and that protein changes. They will have allergies to the genetically modified foods and in the form of grains or whatever else that animal was fed. Let's say a cow. I'm just going to use a cow, for example. They could have allergies to the problems with the antibiotics and hormones that are fed to that animal. This is why I feed grass-fed to my dogs. So I feed my dogs anything that wasn't fed GMOs, grains, and hormones, antibiotics. And that's our, sometimes the protein, for example, if you're buying from certain stores, will have sodium-enhanced meat. So they're injecting that to make the chicken or whatever look plumper. And that sodium is way too high and hard for a dog or a cat to digest and has known to cause a lot of health problems. So there's where your problems really are.
Interesting. I never knew that. Thank you for enlightening us, because that's really interesting. And it makes total sense. It really does. Because obviously, whatever that animal they're eating has been eating or injected with will definitely trickle down and be included.
And it goes up the food chain, right? So all the way, as the carnivore at the top, they're going to get the accumulation of all of that. So it's going to appear as a protein allergy, yes.
Oh, wow. That makes so much sense. Well, thank you for
that. I'm glad it does.
Well, is there any upcoming news you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, there is, in fact, two of my colleagues and I. One is an equine naturopath, and the other is my colleague who I do our podcast with. We wrote a book called Essential Oils in Animal Care, and that is our favorite modality of choice is essential oils. And so we talk about using essential oils with dogs, horses, yes, and birds and cats. And so we're going to be doing some myth debunking in this book also. So it is available on Amazon as of yesterday.
Okay.
Well, I know.
That's good.
It's a small book, but it's a naturopathic approach to the essential. It has a naturopathic approach to it. So it's simply essential oils and animal care, a naturopathic approach.
Wow. That's so awesome. We'll check that out for sure.
Now, and then where we have a class coming up on this as well, so at the council, at the American Council. So we're going to be probably in August, the class will be available for anybody to take. We don't limit it to, you know, practitioners. We open our classes to everybody, just people who want to learn this for themselves. They just don't, if they're a pet owner and want to learn it, they don't have to do the written homework and take the certification.
Okay, good to know. Great. Well, where can everyone find you?
They can go to Aspen Bloom. petcare.com. It's Aspen like the tree, Bloom, L-O-O-M, petcare.com. And they can find me there. My blog is on the site. Everything is all in one place now.
Excellent. Great. Well, we will have a link to Dr. Bloomer's website on our show page. Everyone should check it out because she has so much wonderful information on there. We all care so much about our canine kids, and we really want them to be happy and healthy. So thank you so much, Dr. Kim, for spending time with us today. You're such a wonderful resource, and we're so grateful for you sharing your knowledge and expertise.
Thank you, Christy. I really appreciate you allowing me to share today. It was a privilege.
Of course, of course. Well, we are out of time, and we would like to thank Dr. Bloomer for joining us today and also our producers for making this show possible. Remember, you can find The Doggy Dish on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Links to our social media can be found on the show's page. Thank you for listening to The Doggy Dish. Bye-bye for now.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.